You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Today's episode of the show, I'm going to walk us through the things that I could see, areas for improvement for the Denver Nuggets from Game 1. Maybe some adjustments I think they'll make. In Segment 2, I'm going to talk about areas of regression. Where did Denver maybe overperform in Game 1? Where did the ball bounce their way where it might not in Game 2? And then over the final segment, I'm going to talk about areas of improvement and regression for Portland. So I'll kind of pack both of those segments into just the final one there to talk about those. And I think it'll provide a nice way of both looking backwards at Game 1 and kind of now that I've watched the game three or four different times and have spliced a bunch of clips together for an article for DenverStiffs.com, I have a little bit more insight. A couple new takes, as well as kind of refining some of the ones from yesterday's show. And then it also allows us a chance to look forward and kind of anticipate, because I think, you know, after a second watch, I really think Denver is a lot better in the series and that the matchup favors them. One way to put it, I think that there are things Denver can do to defend Portland. Now, they're not going to stop Damian Lillard. There's some things that he can do. You know, he can go off CJ McCollum. They're not going to stop him. Even Cantor, I think, can have games like he did in Game 1. But there are things they can do to kind of make it difficult for them. I don't know that there's a whole lot Portland can do. Denver might miss shots or, you know, it's basketball. Anything can happen. It's sports. But I just don't know if there's anything. Everything I can think of for Portland to do to Denver, I think Denver has a counter for. So I'll get into some of that. But let's start. Segment 1. As always, you guys, check out the entire Locked On Network, Locked On Blazers, a lot of good stuff over there, Locked On Rockies, keep up with the Rockies with Jenna Garcia, Locked On Broncos, of course, you can get with Cody Rourke, and then all of the different teams. There's lots of NBA going on. If you've got time throughout your day, after you're done with Locked On NBA, Locked On Nuggets, go ahead and check out some of the other teams if you're curious. All right, areas of improvement for the Denver Nuggets. Number one, Torrey Craig got into foul trouble in this game, and while I don't think it necessarily affected the game a whole lot, Torrey Craig was good in this one. He was a plus five, only played 19 minutes, had the four fouls. I think I'm really curious to see if Malone plays Malik Beasley with the starters as much in Game 2 as he did in Game 1. That lineup got 14 minutes. And even though it was only a plus 6, there was a lot of things that happened with those lineups that I think if that lineup plays again, a lot of minutes, especially minutes against the second unit or a mixed lineup, I think that lineup's going to be like a plus 15, plus 20. That is a single lineup that Portland cannot guard. So Portland, just to kind of set the base, Portland cannot guard Denver's pick and roll, at least as they tried to in Game 1 with their center on Jokic. Now, I'm going to talk later about an adjustment where maybe they put some different guys on Murray, different guys on Jokic. But the base defense that they prefer to play against every team, it has no chance. And when you have Aminu and you have Mo Harkless on the court, two very good defenders with some length, the backside of that, you know, you can cover a little bit more ground and maybe make things halfway difficult. I mean, Denver in the half court in this game was just phenomenal. 91st percentile in half court offense amongst all games, according to Cleaning the Glass. So it was hyper efficient, and I think it will continue to be. But when you take Aminu or Harkless off, one of those guys, or both, and you replace them with Rodney Hood or Zach Collins or Myers Leonard, that there's no chance. The drop-off as far as backside rotation guys in the pick and roll from Aminu and Harkless to anybody else is really, really, really weak. Now, if you put Malik Beasley out there for Torrey Craig, one thing that I think, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, but, you know, guys were sticking close to Craig. They were playing him kind of honestly and not helping off. I think they'll probably sag off that in the future, but if you have Malik Beasley out there, you put Gary Harris in one corner, Malik Beasley the other corner, or at least the other side of the court, and you have two just extreme gravity guys that are going to knock down wide-open kick-out shots. You could put Millsap or Mason Plumlee or even Torrey Craig if you go small ball. You could put either of those guys down in the dunker spot and run pick-and-roll with Jokic. Jokic will absolutely beast. In those minutes, with Murray, Harris, Beasley, and Jokic on the court, and then, you know, the power forward position, it could be Millsap or Plumlee. In those 14 minutes, Jokic had 16 points on 5 of 5 shooting, 6 of 6 from the free throw line. So he got to the line, had 3 assists. I mean, he was basically perfect. He was basically a perfect game. It reminds me all the way back to that Phoenix game. And this was when good Barton existed, before bad Barton, post-injury Barton happened. You know, Jokic had a perfect game and he was playing most of his minutes with that starting group. This reminds me of that. Teams that cannot guard the pick and roll and you give 3 elite threats out there around the from the shooting spots, it's just deadly. So I think Denver, one area of improvement, that lineup can probably play the same amount of minutes or even more, and I just think they'll hit their shots. I think they were 1-for-10. That lineup, 1-for-10 from the three-point line. Now you're talking about Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic, Malik Beasley, Gary Harris. These are great shooters. They went 1-for-10, and they were still a +6. Just imagine if they would have gone 3-for-10, 4-for-10. I mean, they would have absolutely crushed and opened up this game. Beasley staying connected to Hood off of screen. So Rodney Hood really went off, and he was one of the big threats, I think, one of the X factors for Portland because they need scoring from other places. Beasley, and I have some clips I'll put on Denver Stiffs for an article tomorrow. Beasley, for whatever reason, Malone called a timeout. Back-to-back possessions in the pick and roll. He gets hot up on screens from being indecisive. You call the timeout. He goes back out there, and from that point on, he was a lot more deliberate in going over. And sometimes when there's a pick and roll and, you know, it's like way out there, it's not in the exact spot you're hoping for, sometimes you question, am I supposed to go over this? Am I supposed to go under? With Rodney Hood, 35 feet from the basket, you don't typically want to go over the screen, but I think just being decisive and saying, okay, I'm going to jump it over, it at least allows the defense to know what they're supposed to do on the back end. And once Beasley started doing that, I thought Rodney Hood had a lot more of a difficult time. Forcing him to be an off-the-dribble mid-range scorer, just off the dribble, shake and bait guy. To me, that's Denver's best bet. Getting stuck on screens going under, that allowed him to knock down, I think, 3 3-pointers. And a lot of those are on just kind of those comfortable 3-point shots. So getting him off of there. Fast break conversion. Denver in this game, some comical stats here. In transition, they were in the 12th percentile in points per possession this year. So really, really bad at this game. Really, really bad at finishing it on the break. They had all those steals, all those turnovers, all those fast break opportunities, but they just weren't converting them. You figure if they just get 50 percentile, you're talking about another 8 to 10 points. And again, with Denver already having a near double-digit win and being up double digits in the fourth, you tack on another 6-7 points, and that's quite a bit. The wedge action for Jokic when Aminu is out is absolutely money. And what I mean by this wedge action, one of Denver's favorite sort of pet plays, usually it's Gary Harris, Jokic on like the left elbow, or actually even right elbow. They run it for him because he likes to go down that left block. So we'll say Jokic on the right elbow. You get a cross screen from Gary Harris usually, and Jokic kind of dives from one elbow to the opposite block. And when he gets the ball there, it's just one of the best ways to get him in post position for an ISO. Well, Denver had a handful of those. I think had the game been closer, it probably would have been part of their base offense. They were going to run that Murray-Jokic pick and roll to death, and they just kept hammering that. But sort of as a change of pace, that little wedge action I think would have been a nice one that they kind of went to. There was one moment, I think Denver's up 11 points. They call a timeout. Coming out of it, they run it, and Jokic just fumbles the pass. He just drops it completely. But that's a play that they already had such a hard time handling Jokic on the block and in the post. You give him that little play there that really opened things up, and I just think he'll draw fouls. He'll eat really well. And those are the main areas, I think. I mean, Denver played a really good game. I think a lot of the things that they did are repeatable, but those are the things that I looked at and thought, okay, these are the few things Denver didn't do well, and they actually make a pretty big difference. And if Denver can clean up those in game two, I think they can really open it up. Listeners, you've heard about me talking about this. One of my favorite sponsors, the Wyze Cam. It's the camera that gives 1080 full HD images, so clear you won't miss a thing. Night vision, two-way audio streamed right directly to your phone. And it's only $20. It's ridiculous. A 1-inch by 1-inch by 1-inch cube that you can mount in any room. You can put it outside, and it'll stream videos directly to your phone. These are so affordable that you can get multiple of them. You can set up your house like Fort Knox, put 10 different cameras around your house, pull up your phone, and you can have click on whichever angle you want. It's a really, really cool thing that, you know, I think it's just amazing that the prices on these types of things have fallen so much. Wyze also offers free free rolling 14-day cloud storage with no subscription fees. You just, if you go out of town for a week or two, you can rewind the video in your house up to 14 days. So if something went missing or something happened, you want to know what happened, rewind, you got the video right there. It's really, really cool. Here's what you're going to want to do though. Go to wyze.com, wyze.com/locked. And that's the URL you're going to use to make sure you get the best deal on all of their prices, accessories, everything else. That's wyze.com/locked. Couple areas of regression here, some ways that Denver, you know, in game two, maybe they overperformed in some areas in game one. In game two, they can kind of fall back. I got a couple of them here. I think five, six different notes. Millsap had his post game working on Al-Farouq Aminu, and Aminu is one of my favorite players, defensive player. He's just so versatile, so smart, and I thought that Millsap maybe ran a little bit hot, especially in that first quarter, you know, got him to bite on a few fakes, hit a couple tough shots that were defended well. And I don't know that he's going to do that every time. I mean, Millsap really was cooking in this game early on. And if you just change that one matchup, maybe it makes Millsap a little bit less effective on offense. So that's one thing I kind of anticipate. Now, Aminu might switch assignments. And if that's the case, maybe they throw him on, I'll talk about this a little bit later, but they might throw him on Jokic. And if that's the case, Millsap should be able to eat. I mean, Jokic did such a good job of eating, of dominating Kanter and scoring at will in that pick and roll. If they switch the matchup and go to Millsap, you know, he'll need to do the exact same thing. He'll need to put pressure on Portland to send the double team. They run pick and roll with him. He'll have to really be effective. But if they stick with Aminu, I don't anticipate that Millsap will be as efficient as he was in this game. I still think he can win the matchup and get some points, but he was 7 of 12 in this game for 19 points. That's above his averages for the season. The Nuggets had 12 steals. They had 12 or more steals just 6 times in the regular season. So some of this, and I went back and watched it, you know, Denver played some good defense. Jokic very good. And Lillard, he doesn't have a ton of guys to kick out to. So part of the problem Portland's offense runs into is they have CJ McCollum. They've got Damian Lillard. They've got Kanter inside who can score. But, you know, Harkless and Aminu, you're going to force those guys to beat you. Some of the other guys, they might try to bring in off the bench. You're going to force those guys. You can help off a little bit more. And Jokic, his job containing those pick and rolls, you know, he has to move his feet. He has to really try to keep Damian Lillard in front of him. I thought he did a very good job of that. Didn't give Lillard too many of those easy ones where he blows by and just gets a wide open layup. I mean, Lillard had some points in the paint, but he had to really work for him. He had some nice reverses. He had just some really crafty moves. But it's easier on Jokic when he doesn't have to worry about like some of those big passes out. He can just kind of zero in on keeping the ball in front of him, and then when he goes into a shooting motion, get his hands on it. So he had some steals. Mason Plumlee had 5 steals, kind of a ridiculous line. I don't think Denver will have that. On the flip side, Portland had 18 or more turnovers just 13 times this season. So Denver caught them basically only 1 out of every 8 games or so would they have that many turnovers in a game. So you can't expect them to have that many. They'll probably clean it up. It wasn't necessarily that Denver's defense was putting a ton of pressure on the ball or anything like that. They just, you know, a couple of these unlucky, maybe a little bit unfocused or whatever. But you can't expect that to happen, I think, in game two. They got in the bonus really early in the third quarter, and on some of these were lucky calls. Now, Denver, I don't think this game had, like, wildly lopsided officiating, but there were in that third quarter, early on, late in the quarter, I thought there were some ticky-tack ones on some of Denver guys, but early on, the first 3 calls of the third quarter for the against Portland, I thought all of them were sort of 50-50 calls or less, and Denver got the benefit of that. And one of the stories of that third quarter was that Denver was able to get in the bonus early, and then there was a lot of foul calls. So in addition, you know, I've always talked about how Jokic is really good at drawing fouls, just not drawing shooting fouls. Well, if you get him in there when they already are in the bonus, well, now those fouls he draws off ball or backing guys down slowly, now he's going to the line for those, and that's why he was able to shoot 6 free throws, and that's why the Nuggets as a team were able to get to the line. So will they get that same whistle And not even will they get the same whistle, just will Portland foul? I mean, some of the fouls Portland got after getting in the bonus were really dumb ones. And you just have to kind of, like, Myers-Leonard had a really dumb one on Jokic where he's fighting for position. The ball's not even across half court, and he's just, like, getting extra physical with Jokic. Just really dumb stuff. So will Portland be more disciplined in that? And you know, how will that affect the game? He really put pressure on Denver to score even more in the half court. And then they shot really well from the three-point line. Now, I think Denver is a rhythm team. I've talked about this all year. It's not about open three-point shots as much as it is about just the rhythm. Is the ball popping? Are they getting the shots in the spots and on time that they want? And Denver, I thought this whole game played a very easy game. I think for both teams, it was, especially in the first half, this was an easy offensive game. I think for Denver, it was an even easier offensive game in the second half, whereas for Portland, things got harder because Denver did a much better job of buckling down on defense. Will that happen? Can Portland kind of bring things up a notch? They sat out for nearly a week, or I think actually exactly a week. So maybe there was just a little bit of that pacing and timing that was a little bit rusty for them. And if so, does Denver go 12 of 29? That's 41% from the three-point line. That's running a little bit hot. And so, you know, who knows? Jokic, I've talked about this. He's going to get a lot of looks because they just don't guard him at the three-point line. So he goes 3 of 5. We know from watching Jokic all season long, 3 of 5, he's probably more of a 2 for 5 guy, not a 3 for 5 guy. So, or maybe even a little bit less than that, a 2 for 6 guy. So he ran a little bit hot. Gary Harris, 2 for 5 sounds about right. Jamal Murray, 3 for 6. He hit that transition one. You know, who knows? Malik Beasley, 2 for 5. Maybe he can improve a little bit there. Will Barton, 1 for 2. Will Barton on rewatch in this game really did a nice job. He had a really ugly turnover, but outside of that one, and then he had a miss at the rim that in transition where he just got blocked to hell. But other than that, I thought he did a really nice job in this game, especially a nice job of sort of not trying to do too much and staying within himself. I wonder if it, and I hope that's a lesson he sort of learned, because it'll serve Denver in the playoffs quite a bit to kind of pick his spots a little bit more wisely. I think he's done that a nice job of that over the last two games. But shooting, you know, 12 of 29, we've seen Denver have 12 games where they shot 12% or 8%, whatever it was in that game seven, and they can still win, but it certainly makes their offense and everything that they do look a lot better when they shoot as well from three as they did in this game. All right, some areas of improvement for the Portland Trailblazers. Mo Harkless, I alluded to this earlier. Mo Harkless stuck really tight on Torrey Craig, and I don't know if it's because Torrey Craig in this playoffs has had some nice, you know, some nice shooting games, and when he knocks down those threes, it seems to be especially hard to overcome. But I suspect, I mean, Denver's offense is really good, and when they're knocking down shots and when they're able to get in rhythm, and especially when they're able to get into their pick and roll the way they have and the way I anticipate that they just will be able to in the series against Portland, when they do that, you have to pick a poison. You have to pick the best of a bad situation against them, and to me, allowing Craig to be a high-volume scorer, he might do it. I mean, giving that guy wide-open three-pointers, he'll probably shoot 37, 38% or better, and every now and then he's going to shoot like 60, 70%. Go something like 6 for 9 or something like that if you don't, you know, if you give him that many just wide open looks. Nonetheless, to me, that's such a high variance game. If you give a guy like Torrey Craig 8 shots, he either makes them or doesn't. There's only 2 outcomes. And if he doesn't, you know, if he goes 2 for 8, you won. You won that sort of gamble that you took. If he goes 6 for 8, you lost, and you just kind of have to live with it. But Mo Harkless, to me, they need to do something to kind of send an extra body, and Jokic will find the open guy. He'll find Torrey Craig, but to me, I would live with that. So that's one area of improvement, I think. Damian Lillard's 3-point shooting, he was 4 of 12. You know, Denver, especially in the second half, I thought did a much better job of sort of forcing him into tough ones. He took some of those really long threes, a step or two behind the 3-point line, and he just didn't make them. 4 of 12. And Lillard, we know 4 of 12 is not that bad. I mean, he probably on average goes 5 of 12. So it's not like it was that off of what his norm is. The thing is, just like with Torrey Craig, he either makes them or doesn't. So if he goes 4 of 12, does that mean he's in line for a regression where he goes 6 for 12 or 7 for 12? Maybe. And if so, that changes the whole game. So as much as I thought Denver did a good job of sort of keeping him, you know, forcing him into tough stuff, he's still a guy that can go off. And if he does, that changes the whole game. The same thing goes for CJ. He was hot early. He kind of cooled off, and he, I think, even more so than Lillard. Really, I thought Denver did a good job of containing him, and perhaps that's because Gary Harris spent a lot of time on him, and I think Gary Harris a better on-ball defender than Torrey Craig. But CJ's three-point shooting just 2 of 7. If he has one of those games where he goes 5 of 10 or something like that, that'll change the game. Enes Kanter's rebounding. He clearly looks tender. Who knows how much this injury is going to affect him? We were kind of joking as a media group watching him practice the other day, watching him warm up. He really doesn't show as many signs of being like injured. I mean, some people, I see some of the people writing about him like, oh, he can't even lift his hand to tip his hat or whatever. You're like, no, it's not that bad. And I think he'll probably ham it up as most athletes do, ham up an injury. And I think he really is injured for sure. You could tell it that he was tender on these rebounds. But I say all that to say he could bounce back. I don't think he's going to just like avoid physicality the whole series. If he does, they might not be able to play him. Just 7 rebounds in this one for him, and just 2 on the offensive glass. He's a guy that he's part of his value as an offensive player is he's so hard to box out and he's so hard to keep off the offensive glass. If he's not that, then he's not nearly as good of a player. We saw this, by the way, last year with Paul Millsap. Millsap came back with that left hand injury the back half of the year, and he couldn't rebounding might have been the number one area he was affected by it, because he just every time he went up for like one-handed rebounds with his right hand, almost never went up two-handed, never went up with his left. So I think there's kind of a similar thing going on with Kanter that if he can bounce back from that, maybe gets an injection, maybe just 2 days he's feeling a little bit better, his rebounding will really change things up. New matchups. I alluded to this one earlier, but I'm going to go a little bit more in depth. If I was them, one thing I might try is to put a little bit more length and size on the ball, on the pick and roll. So right now you're guarding it with Damian Lillard, who's really a bad defender. I mean, Damian Lillard is a great player, great offensive player, great all those things, but defensively in the pick and roll, he's not very good at all. And on top of that, he doesn't have a ton of length. I mean, he's average height for a guard, a point guard, but he doesn't have a ton of length, and Murray was able to deliver that pocket pass to Jokic. And I've talked about this all year. When you get the ball to Jokic on that short roll, the Nuggets are as unstoppable as just about anybody. The problem is, you know, Murray's still a young point guard. He's still learning to do that. Well, if I'm Portland, I put Mo Harkless on the ball, and maybe I put Al-Farouq Aminu on Jokic, so when they go to that screen action, when they go to Jokic screening him, you can either switch that straight up, and now you got Aminu, who's a great defender, doesn't fall for fakes, he's not going to get tripped up or intimidated going out there to guard Murray, and he's got a lot of length, so Murray would have to really create a lot of separation on his step back to get a shot over him. But more importantly, as two guys come together on the pick and roll, they can both get their hands in the passing lanes. They just have a little bit more activity, a little bit more hand, length and hands in the passing lanes, and now maybe Murray doesn't make that pass all the time. And even if you just reduce it so that he's nervous to throw it, maybe you get a couple turnovers out of it, you can really change things up. Now, the problem with that is that means you're probably sticking Lillard on a Torrey Craig who can really punish him on the offensive glass. You put Kanter on Millsap, and maybe they just use Millsap as the screener now and take Jokic off. Now, that's still a win. Jokic and Murray, that's your best pick-and-roll duo. So even just changing it to Millsap takes a little bit off of it. But that might be a thing that you do. The other thing is, Aminu, for as good as he is, Jokic just will murder him on the offensive glass. So I think Denver would find ways to maybe not just try to get that ball on the short roll, but maybe to run the action and then put Jokic down on the block to just start getting position. And Jokic, some of his best offensive games have come when he's gotten, 7-8 offensive boards and just tons of second chance points. So there is risk and reward. This is why I say every move that Portland makes, Denver has sort of a counter built in. And one of the things I'll say about Michael Malone and his staff, I think they are, even during the regular season, I think he is incredibly prepared. I think he's a coach that thinks of every possible scenario. So this is a scenario that I think Malone anticipates, and I think his staff probably has a game plan for. Nonetheless, Denver absolutely murdered them in the Murray-Jokic pick and roll, in particular when Lillard and Kanter were guarding him. So they might try to switch that up and see if it's just the best of all bad sort of scenarios for them. Start of the fourth could have been a lot worse. This is another one that I'm curious for, and I'd love to ask Malone before the game. I wish there was a practice today. I had like 8 questions for Malone. That this series, the game one was so fascinating, I wanted to get a ton of questions in. But one of them was that fourth quarter to begin, Malik Beasley hits 2 3-pointers that were pretty tough.
tough shots, and he knocked him down, shot him with confidence. And Malik Beasley, just a great shot maker, man. His 3-point shot is up there with just about anybody in the NBA for just how pretty it is. But he knocked down two of those, and that unit already gave up, I think, 4 points, or 3 or 4 points. The Nuggets up, I think, 9, and when they called a timeout and put Jokic back in, they were only up 5, I think, 5 or 4. So they gave up a little bit of that lead, and it could have been a lot worse. If you take away those Beasley threes, which, again, it wasn't that they were bad shots, but they weren't great shots. They just were, you know, great finishes by him. You take those away, I think it'll be a little bit different. And the start of that fourth quarter, start of fourth quarter runs can be really huge. If Denver's up 5 points, and that's first 3 minutes of the fourth quarter, Portland goes on like a 10-2 run and takes the lead. That's a huge momentum killer, and it kind of changes the game. I think psychologically it's tough to do, and I saw that happening in game one. But thankfully Malik Beasley knocked down a couple shots to kind of change the way it felt, at least in that moment. A couple areas of regression for Portland, ways they might take a step back. Rodney Hood was on fire from three. He's a career 34% 3-point shooter. He went 3 for 4. And again, I talked about how the Nuggets made a little bit of an adjustment in after a timeout, in particular with Malik Beasley. I think he probably understands his assignment a little bit better with Rodney Hood. And so I expect that he will not go 3 for 4 in game two, but maybe he will. But that's one area you look at and think, okay, they could probably go down. Even though they were only 38% overall as a team, which actually only 38, that's above average, probably above their season average. You still look at that guy in particular and think, okay, if you cut some of the teeth off of that lineup, especially that secondary lineup that just their first unit can't defend, their second unit really can't defend. So if you give Denver's second unit, which features Torrey Craig and Malik Beasley, Will Barton, like fast guys that get out in transition, Monte Morris, Mason Plumlee, if you give them opportunities to get a stop and run, not only does it take away the 3 points that he might not get from missing, but it gives Denver a very favorable matchup going the other way. And one thing I'll say, San Antonio is a team that does not beat themselves. They are so disciplined and so good in a lot of these factors like transition. And when I was watching this game, coming off of a game 7 with San Antonio, watching this game against Portland, they make so many mistakes. I mean, so does Denver. But most, your average NBA team makes a ton of a lot of mistakes on every possession. But the Spurs don't beat themselves. And as I was watching this Nuggets game, there were so many possessions where Denver would get a stop, bring the ball up the court quick, and there would be cross matches because Portland just didn't get back quick enough and get mixed, you know, find their guy. So you'd end up with like Lillard on Millsap or, you know, something like Harkless on Murray. Something where they just were not where they wanted to be and the help wasn't where they wanted to be. And I think So maybe with that second unit, if Rodney Hood starts missing, I think Denver can really punish them because they're not going to be a team that can get back as well. And then lastly, just 3 fouls on Aminu, 3 on Kanter. Jokic, as I mentioned, really good at drawing fouls. This is a team that's going to have to either send the double or just get really physical and risk fouling. And in this game, neither one of those guys were really in foul trouble. If you put Aminu on Jokic, I anticipate that one of the things Jokic will do is get him in foul trouble. And if you take Aminu out of there, he's so important. He might be the third or fourth most important player on this roster for Portland. You take him out of there, just defensively, they have no chance. So those are the areas of regression I see on their end. I think I said yesterday, I think both these were a B game and for the Nuggets and a B game for Portland. I don't think it was one of those things where it's like, oh, one team really got the benefit of the doubt. The one thing I'll say is the Nuggets, I think, have more adjustments they can make than Portland. Denver probably less urgent. They probably feel less urgency to make an adjustment, at least right out of the gate. Portland, I expect, will make a few adjustments, so we'll see how kind of that chess match goes. And then secondly, the most important thing for Denver. Denver has been great all season long, and in particular in the playoffs when they've needed to be great. They have been below average by their own standard when they have not needed to. They have a 1-0 lead. They probably felt like that game was at least somewhat easy. Do they come out in game two with a little bit of a, you know, let's just kind of feel this game out type mentality? If so, you know, they risk a slow start. They risk falling behind, and you just don't want to see that. If Denver can get up 2-0 heading to Portland, to me, in my mind, that gives Denver a great, great shot of splitting in Portland and coming back without. You go in up 2-0, you don't have a ton of pressure. You have 2-game lead. You can take both of those games and he'd probably shoot a little bit better and all that stuff. So Denver, a great opportunity, but I wonder what their sense of urgency will be tomorrow. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Can't wait for tomorrow's game and can't wait to record tomorrow's episode following the game. We'll see you all then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.